Two pretty familiar scripture passages today. Psalm 23, arguably the most well-known scripture passage of all time, maybe right there with John 3:16. We know it, many of us, by heart, hear it read oftentimes, most often, interestingly enough, at funerals or memorial services. And then this passage from John, we've heard before as well. It's in the lectionary regularly about Jesus claiming his identity as the good shepherd. And so our theme is very clear today. It's about shepherd and sheep. And so as I was thinking about that, I was reminded very quickly of a song that I learned many years ago when I was first a camper at camp and then on staff at camp. My daughters know this as well. Other kids that go to the camp that we go to and other camps know it as well. And it goes a bit like this. I just want to be a sheep, ba, 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 ba. I just want to be a sheep, ba, 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 ba. I pray the Lord my soul to keep. I just want to be a sheep, ba, 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 ba. You got it? No, I'm not going to make you sing it. Thank you. I appreciate that. Thank you very much. I thought that was a very good rant. I might record it someday. That's the chorus, and then there are different verses. There's, I don't want to be a Pharisee. I don't want to be a Pharisee. Because they're not fair, you see. You see how that goes, right? Yeah. Okay. I don't want to be a Sadducee because they're so sad, you see. You know. I don't want to be a hypocrite because they're not hip with it. Right? You keep making up. It's all of like Jesus's adversaries. You don't want to be them. You want to be the sheep, right? We sing this song over and over again. It's cute enough when I sing it, I know. But when you see a bunch of little kids singing it, it's even more so with the ears going and all those sorts of things. I just want to be a sheep. Well, you know, often when we come to these passages in lectionary, when we come to preach them on a Sunday morning, we focus particularly on the shepherd, on Jesus. Jesus' claims as to who the shepherd is and what the shepherd does, that the shepherd's willing to lay down his life for the sheep. What we don't do as often is focus on the opposite side of that equation, and that's the sheep. And this is one of those analogies. Sometimes Jesus' analogies can be difficult to understand, but this one's pretty straightforward, right? I mean, we know who the shepherd is, and we know who the sheep is. Jesus is clearly the shepherd. We're not the shepherd. We are clearly the sheep. Jesus is not the sheep. So I thought we've probably spent enough time over the last number of years when this has come up for us, talking a bit about what it means that Jesus is the shepherd. It was time to spend a little bit of time thinking about and talking about what it means that we are sheep. And I guess the first thing to just get out there is, it's not a compliment on the surface. I get that, right? Like, you just think, you wouldn't say to somebody, oh, you're just like a sheep, and they would really take that to heart and be grateful to hear that. But there are some things that are commendable in our identity as sheep. There are some words of comfort in this, even some words of challenge as well. So there are a few characteristics. There's some things that have to do with us being sheep that I want to lift up for you. First, I want to share with you a story. It really is probably my very favorite story to tell. I've told this story before, though it was long enough ago that maybe those of you who heard it have forgotten it. And those of you who haven't heard it, you're in for a treat, at least in my opinion. This is my favorite story about something that happened to me in my life. I don't have a lot of those that are my, but this is absolutely my favorite. And I had no part to play in this. This happened to me, if you will. So I was a senior in college, and a good friend of mine, Tyler, was getting married. And we got a group of people together for a bachelor party, as you are wont to do, right, when somebody's getting married. And so we went out to celebrate Tyler's bachelor party, and one of the things that we did was we went to a Pittsburgh Pirates baseball game. And there were probably about 8 or 10 of us in this group. And Tyler had moved a few times in his life, so he had folks from different places. So we didn't all know each other very well. We got to know each other over the course of the evening, but we didn't all know each other very well. But we went out to this baseball game, and we're enjoying the game. Some of the guys in the group had a few beverages, as you are wont to do sometimes in a baseball game. And you know that group of people that sometimes is really annoying because they've had a few beverages? This is the only time in my life where I was associated with that group. I am quick to claim that I was not participating in the ridiculousness that was going on, but it started around me. I was enjoying it, I will say. But some of the guys in the group decided, we were sitting in the outfield, and there were a few kids, just two boys, probably about 10 or 11 years old, who were sitting just a few rows in front of us, and all they wanted in the world was a baseball. And so every half inning, as the players would come out to the outfield and play catch with one another, warm up, the boys would be yelling to get a ball. And so about the second or third inning, the guys in our group decided to take up their cause. And so they started yelling at the guys on the field, doing everything they could to get these kids the ball, and making up ridiculous lies about the kids, just to tug on the heartstrings, trying to get these kids, the guys, to throw the ball to them. Half inning after half inning after half inning, this went on and on and on. Well, eventually in about the sixth or seventh or eighth inning, somewhere around in there, one of the players got a hold of one and hit a home run. And it ended up landing maybe 10 or 12 people down from these boys. So it was close, but it wasn't there. And this young woman came up excited. She was holding it. She was probably in her mid-20s at the time. And she was so excited. Well, suddenly it was like there was blood in the water. And the sharks of our group laid in us, give the kids the ball. Come on, give them the ball. And the girl was not going to do it. She was not willing. The woman was not willing to do it. So out of nowhere, one of the guys in our group, who I didn't know very well, come to find out later, interestingly enough, for a while he was the mascot for the Oakland A's. He literally was Thumper. He yells out of nowhere, if I can guess your name, will you give the girl the ball, or give the kids the ball? I'm like, what is going on? What is happening? Because he was about a row or two behind me. And this girl, this woman stands up as confident as anybody could be. And she yells back at him, yeah, go ahead, guess my name. And he stands up and he points at her and he says, Rafaela. And her face just drops. And she walks over and she hands the ball to the two boys. It was our own Rumpelstiltskin moment. Turns out there was a guy that had gone to high school with her sitting behind our friend. And he said, her name's Rafaela, and the whole Rumpelstiltskin bit was all this guy's, I mean, all his doing. So to show he was a good sport, he bought her another beverage, which she was happy by. But everybody was happy in the end, and it really was. This is why I love telling this story, because it's such a great story. Of all the names to yell out at this woman, who would have thought it would be Rafaela, and that was literally her name. I tell you that story, one, because I just love to tell it, but because it highlights for me how important it is for us to be known, what it means for us. When somebody knows who we are, more than he knew her name because somebody behind him had told him, but to really be known. And that's one of the truths that comes to us out of this passage when Jesus is talking about the good shepherd and the sheep, because he says the shepherd knows the sheep and the sheep know the shepherd. What great comfort comes to those of us who are sheep in knowing that we are known fully and more than just known, loved and cared for by the great shepherd. One of my favorite scripture passages we read last week, Psalm 139, highlights that. Lord, you have searched me and you know me. You knit me together in my mother's womb. I am fearfully and wonderfully made. Over and over again, we are reminded and comforted in the scriptures by being told that we are known and loved by the God who created us, redeems us, sustains us, and by the one he sent to be our shepherd, and that is Jesus Christ. So as sheep, one of the great comforts we have is in knowing that we are known and in being known that we are loved. Another story. A few years ago, I was together with my friends from seminary. Some of you know we get together every fall, a group of us that have been doing this for many years now. We were getting together for our regular gathering, and that year we happened to be going to one of the members' family homes, which is a mountain cabin in the Smoky Mountains of eastern Tennessee. Tennessee, Jennifer. There you go. Eastern Tennessee. And it really was. It was a harrowing trip up the drive to this place. I thought for sure I was going to die. But once we got there, the place itself was okay, but the views were amazing. A third-story deck that had gorgeous views of the valley below. And so this was most of the way up the mountain, this house. But what the guy whose family owned it told us was that we were close to the top, but just on the top of the mountain was a section of the Appalachian Trail that would go right through there. So one of the days we were together, we had a few hours where we kind of had scheduled in some free time, and my late brother-in-law was with us, and he was an Eagle Scout, an outdoors person, and so he convinced me to go on a little adventure to go up the mountain and to find the trail, just to see what was up there, so I agreed to do that with him. It was a beautiful day, and so we left the back of the cabin, and there was no trail from the house to the trail. We had to scurry over fallen trees, and it was pretty steep at times, but we eventually made our way up, and I was surprised at how easy it was to find that portion of the trail. It was pretty well marked. It was pretty well beaten down, and so we walked on the trail for a little bit, no more than a few hundred yards, until we finally found a spot, and we sat down and just enjoyed the beauty of nature around us, one another's company, had some good conversation, and then we decided, well, it's probably time to head back. It was at that moment that we realized that he as an Eagle Scout and me as a Boy Scout for a whole of about 5 minutes had forgotten to mark the way we'd gotten there. So the path was marked, but the path would take us either to Georgia or to Maine, right? Like, not necessarily to the house we were staying in, which we knew was not far away, but we could not see. It was dense forest. So we started walking back thinking, oh, we'll find it. I'm not sure if they would have helped, but we didn't bring our cell phones, of course. I mean, who would have brought their cell phones on this? So we had no way of communicating, so we started to panic a little, I'm not going to lie to you, and thinking we might have to spend, it was in the fall, it was going to be a cold night, if we were going to be huddled together and pretty closer in a way that we may not have been before, just to stay warm if we had not been able to find somebody, if they hadn't caught on and not been able to find us. Eventually, we found enough landmarks that we noticed, trees that looked a little different, that we decided, okay, I think it's here, and we started to scamper back down the mountain, and thankfully, we at least got to a place where we didn't find the exact way we came up. We were still a little bit off, but we could see the house, and we made our way. My heart was beating, half because of the physical exertion that I'm not used to, but half because, man, I really thought we were lost, and I was fearful of what that meant for us. And I was also fearful of leaving our friends in that kind of scenario, that where did they go? We can't find them. Maybe you've been lost to some degree, maybe not to that degree, or even worse perhaps in your life. But one of the things we know about sheep from Jesus' perspective especially, and not from this passage, but from the passage in Luke 15 where Jesus talks about the shepherd and the sheep, is that sheep get lost. They wander off. Something grabs their attention in the distance and they leave the flock. And you know, that happens to us too. And I know to some degree, maybe I'm preaching to the choir a little bit here, right? Because you're here on a Sunday morning, but my guess is that doesn't mean that you haven't been lost. Or that maybe even as you're here in body, you don't still feel somewhat lost on your spiritual journey. We all get lost. We get so comfortable with the flock, but we look off on the horizon and we see something that catches our eye and we start moving towards it because it seems so much more exciting and inviting than what we know. Until the next thing, we look around and the flock is nowhere to be seen and the shepherd is nowhere to be seen. And in our spiritual journey, we feel alone and maybe lost and maybe afraid and not sure what to do with ourselves, not sure where to go. But the good news of the shepherd and us as sheep is that we will be found. Because the shepherd will leave the 99 to find the one. Because it's the same good shepherd that Jesus is talking about in both of those passages. So we as sheep, we have the propensity for getting lost. It happens to all of us at some point in our lives. And some point along our spiritual journey, along our journey of faith, we get lost. Something catches our eye and we think it's more exciting or more inviting or more fulfilling and we go searching for it there. And we forget about what we have in the flock and what we have in the shepherd. But the shepherd's going to find us. The shepherd's not going to quit until the shepherd finds us. And so the great comfort of knowing that we are sheep of this particular flock is knowing that even when we are lost, we are not lost entirely because our shepherd will find us. And lastly, maybe you remember when you were a child, and maybe elementary school or so, and you were in school or outside of school with your friends, you were getting ready to play some sort of a game or activity, and teams were being chosen. Do you remember this? And one team captains were chosen, and they're picking different people, and maybe you weren't the captain at this moment, and people were getting chosen, and you got chosen, and you were excited, and you're going to be on this team, but then one of the other kids that you really didn't want to be on your team gets chosen to be on your team. And now you got to put up with that kid. Or maybe a little more recently, when you were later on in school or in college, you were in a class, and you were put into a group for a project. And part of your group, some of the people in your group, are not people that you would have chosen, but that were put there with you. Or maybe in your work, that happens to you from time to time, that you are put on a specific project for your employer, and you don't get to choose who gets to be put with you, but your employer does, or your supervisor does, and you have to make it work. The people are with you, and you don't necessarily like it, but it is who's there. I ask you to remember that, because one of the things that Jesus says in this passage is, I have sheep outside of this flock. There are others who are my sheep as much as you are. And that sometimes is a difficult thing to hear for us. Because we may look around this room and see a lot of familiar faces, whether we like each other or not all the time, we're at least comfortable with one another. But Jesus, from time to time, may bring someone in that we didn't expect, who looks different than we do or the others do, who says things differently than we do, who acts differently than we do. It may be that Jesus is going to bring others into our flock or just tend to another flock that we're not as comfortable with Jesus tending to because, you know, we didn't get to choose those sheep. Maybe it's sheep that don't believe like we believe, or don't believe at all, or believe in something totally different, and we think they're not worthy, or they haven't earned it. But here's the truth. The sheep don't get to choose the flock, and the sheep don't get to choose the shepherd, for that matter. The shepherd chooses the sheep. And that happens over and over again in our life together within our particular congregation and within the larger group of Christianity worldwide. Jesus is the shepherd, we're not. The sheep don't get to choose their members, Jesus does. And that sometimes is a challenge to us. Because it means not only do we not get to control the group around us, we don't get to control who's in charge. And we sometimes very consciously and sometimes subconsciously kick against the goads to be the ones who get to control, who get to choose, who get to make the choices. We're not the ones. We're the sheep. And Jesus is the shepherd. And we may not like it at times, but it is what is best. And it might be difficult for us to embrace or to understand, but there are other sheep too. Just as we may have been one of those other sheep at some point in our lives. And the flock has ultimately embraced us.